Mike, and the Hot.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike One. Co-host also, Mike is here. All right. So, we apparently have a show today. And it's apparently about the can lineup. It's going to be a surprise to me as much as it is to you, dear listener, because I've read the first page of our layout so far, Michael.
So, I was somewhat surprised as well that Can put out the lineup as early as they did. Even though I'd said it was happening any second, I kind of didn't believe myself on the last episode. So we thought we were going to do another episode. We were prepping the Sleeper Contenders show and the year in preview continuation there. But like, we can't ignore the Can lineup. I mean, we cover the hell out of the Can Film Festival from this East Hollywood positioning. Connecticut, and we do it beautifully every year. It's perhaps the greatest thing we do, and yeah, I mean with Can coming with their lineup, it's we got to deviate, and you didn't have time to prep at all. I mean, you had life in your way, and so I prepped the episode. We kind of just got all the details from these movies on paper for us to talk about. So this episode could go any which way. It really could. I have no idea what's going to happen right now. And to make matters even more rattling for you, I have like a couple loose ends / retractions, perhaps, from the last episode. Let's see how wildly wrong we might have been. So the Joker Folie à Deux trailer has been watched 167 times in the last 24 hours, Michael, beating Barbie. Does this number,
that's ridiculous,
does this number assuage some of your / our worries here?
My first instinct was people are stupid, but that's the kind of mode I'm in right now. It's gonna make money. I still don't see how it could top Joker 1's box office.
So,
but maybe I'm in the minority now.
I researched some of the highest watched trailers in history. Okay. And there are some of the movies you would think of. There's Avengers Endgame, and there's a lot of the biggest blockbusters ever. However, there's also like Transformers Rise of the Beasts. There's also Thor Love and Thunder, and they underperformed at the box office, I would think, substantially so.
Sure.
This trailer number doesn't necessarily mean everything, but it does mean that there's a lot of interest for Joker Folie à Deux.
And there is a, you know, Gaga involved in anything is going to bring eyes with her little monsters and her online fans there. So it makes some sense there. And obviously those are also people. Can you imagine the Joker 1 fans and the little monsters like going in harmony to the theater together?
Wow.
What's going to happen. That's what the box office is going to be comprised of.
That is a wild mix. There will be people standing in the aisles dancing, and then there will be bros.
A lot of glitter and face paint and trench coats. All.
What if it just turns into like this effing Buffy the Vampire Slayer-esque mixer right in the stairwells?
It's the club scene from Blade.
Yeah. I can see it. Can't you see it?
Sure, why not? Yeah, absolutely.
My God.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, gun to your head right now, where's the box office for this?
It's probably north of
over
billion.
Or under
north
Joker
of,
1.
I still say slightly under, but north of a billion.
How is this musical going to get to $1 billion?
I think it's going to do enough of the Joker repeat to where people just want to see the face paint. They want to see grunge Joker again, even though this is kind of like, it's not really grunge Joker, is it? I don't know musical eras well enough.
If it's a jukebox, then it doesn't matter what era. I mean, it's just they're going to be from all different decades, right?
I don't think they care about That's Entertainment or Burt Bacharach being played.
You got the Joker fans, the Little Monsters, and the Backrack Boys all going to the theater. Yeah, so we could be completely wrong about this. That's fine.
Maybe. But there's still time to get right. Yeah. I think there's a lot, you know, there are a lot more leaves to read in the tea, I guess we could say. Anyway, if that wasn't enough, we couldn't have been more wildly wrong about a premise, about a character than we were with the Maxine trailer, Michael.
Did somebody tweet you about that? Like, how did you get on about this?
I figured it out myself.
Okay.
And it dawned on me that, wait a minute, Pearl was set in the 50s, 60s in Kansas. So it's hard to tell in whatever. She's in Kansas, so who the hell knows? Because they're living back in time in some of those parts anyway.
Right.
But I didn't know what that was set in. And then I remembered X was like 80s, wasn't it? Or late 70s. So this film, Maxine, without giving away any spoilers whatsoever, I'm going to try not to. This is a sequel to X. Pearl is a prequel to X. But the films are about different characters. That's why we're so wrong. I don't think we've been as wrong as this since, you know, werewolves were in Decision to Leave.
So wait, is the old lady in X Pearl?
The old lady in X is Pearl.
Even though X is only like 20 years past Pearl's timeline.
This is not our fault. The same actress plays these two characters. She's playing multiple roles in the same movie, and she doesn't have a lick of makeup on when she goes back in time or when she goes forward. So it's not our fault.
I still don't know that I care that much about the continuity of this trilogy. Like, just give me be a goth being weird and killing people. I'm okay.
You're going to get half of that, but she, I don't know if you're going to get all of that. That's the thing.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, I'll be half satisfied with it.
Anyway, otherwise, I don't know why I wrote down Hot Ones with Conan. Why did I write? Oh, because that was funny. Or why did I write that in this section? I don't know. But I watched Hot Ones with Conan O'Brien.
And you liked it.
I liked it.
Good job.
Why did I put that in this section? This is a great mystery. This might be the greatest mystery of why did I, what triggered me to put that in the retraction section? At all.
I don't know, man. I just don't know.
So, yeah, you guys are getting us when, you know, this is off-season mics, I think. This is like truly dog days of CinemaCon mics. This is, we're just starting to announce, you know, the next slate of films at the Cannes Film Festival, which will form, you know, seven of the Oscar nominees,
right,
if we're lucky.
Right.
Seven nominated films out of next year's Oscar slate. And we're jumping on every detail. Like, I wrote down every single detail that I could find on the internet from every one of these 14 films. And we're only going over 14 films today. But this festival has been very good in terms of an Oscars crossover of late. Seven films each of the last 2 years. Only 2 years per in 2021 and 2020. The Parasite year, there was 8 Oscar-nominated films at the Cannes Film Festival. Otherwise, you know, we're on a streak with Neon winning the Palme d'Or year after year. We're on a streak with the last two of those Neon Palme d'Or winners getting nominated for Best Picture. Parasite, obviously, being the one prior to that got nominated for Best Picture in 2019. So the Cannes Film Festival has had a legitimate Oscars crossover. Greta Gerwig is going to be the Cannes jury president this year. Recent jury heads, Ruben Östlund, Spike Lee, Iñárritu, Cate Blanchett. So we have an Oscars presence and perhaps an increasingly, you know, Oscars footprint. Increasing Oscars footprint, I should say, right? Too many adverbs. Critics use too many adverbs in general. We all got to stop.
That's been the trend lately, is if you're going to be taken seriously at the Oscars, you have to make it into the, you know, one of the big four here, the film festivals, and Cannes is certainly one of them, you know, either Unless you have the goods of a studio backing with a $300 million tagline behind you, sure. Then maybe you can avoid the film festivals. But otherwise, for the smaller films, it seems to be prudent to hit the film festival circuit.
Do you expect, gun to your head right now, do you expect Joker Folie à Deux to go to Venice like it did? But didn't it go to Venice, Joker 1?
It won Venice, didn't it? Didn't it win the little Golden Lion?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was the agreeing of a man who was not sure.
No, you know what? The awards factor of it all just dawned back in my brain.
Yeah. Either it won or it came in second. I don't know. I'm just going to start saying things.
It won something.
Fact. Yeah.
It won a golden something.
Right. It's golden in some way, shape, or form. So, yeah, I would think.
I would think, too.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Anyway, we do got some big names going in. We've been over this a few times. We already knew Furiosa, Mad Max Saga, Horizon, An American Saga, Kevin Costner's Part 1. That's what we learned from this. Part 1 is going to Cannes. We had, Sean Fennessy. And I'm not going to really talk about CinemaCon all that much today. Maybe a few nuggets. But Sean Fennessy of the Big Picture Pod, Porky Pigging in this, he did say that Furiosa's like 8-minute segment looked great and Horizon's like 15-minute segment not so much.
I hate this, by the way. I hate these long these prolonged looks and these like extended previews at stop it. I don't understand the point of it.
The curated long previews just to get the exhibitors psyched up about putting these movies into more of their theaters, it does seem a little I don't know,
because all we get
inside baseball, it just seems
the only news we get out of those is like the extended look looked great, the extended look didn't look great, the crowd was wowed, the crowd was murmured. Like, it doesn't do anything for anyone who isn't in the theater.
Honestly, I had a whole list of stories from CinemaCon. And I'm looking through them, and I'm like, every single one of these write-ups, no offense to anybody who's covering it, they're just kind of nothing burgers. Like, I can't pull any tangible information.
If I was in the theater where Kevin Feige dropped an F-bomb hyping up Deadpool and Wolverine, I would have charged the stage and tried to slap him in the mouth.
Well, it's like, it's like this hamming up. All of these personalities are just hamming it up for the exhibitors.
Yeah, of course. And I guess it works to an extent, because it's like the, where it if you see Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt being in a parade down Broadway, it's going to be tough to view their movie negatively if you watch the Fall Guy immediately after. It's a smart marketing move, I guess, in terms of getting positive word of mouth. You didn't hear a lot of negative stuff coming out of CinemaCon so far, but I just don't I don't know. If that's what you got to do to get positive word of mouth, maybe you don't have the goods in the movie in the first place.
Maybe you don't have the goods. Yeah, maybe you're going to be disappointing. And that's why I think our loving hearts, our innocent loving hearts, are a little jaded in year 7 of Mike Oscar, because we've gone on the hype train for some of these films, and we've been thrown off the rails by some conductor that because we didn't have tickets, we were stowing away like a bunch of ruffians, and we were thrown off into the woods.
Right.
We had to walk.
Could be. All right. What's going to Cannes? You already talked about Sean Fennessy talking about how Horizon doesn't look great, but you didn't mention Megalopolis yet, which is playing in competition and basically is Francis Ford Coppola shouting into the abyss, please someone take this movie.
What's your prediction on Megalopolis? How much does it sell for? Who buys it? Do you have any inkling? Do you have any hunch?
I would guess. My guess, does he even want it to go to streaming?
Your guess is Netflix.
If Netflix came to him and cut him like a $60 million check, would he honestly say no to it?
Why? If there's no other bidders? Why would you go to Cannes if you wanted to be on Netflix? Go to Venice. Go to TIFF.
I wonder what's less palatable to him between playing exclusively on a streamer or having a contingency marketing deal with some studio where he has to pay them to market the film for him, as opposed to them just doing it wholesale. Because it sounded like he was very resistant to that idea in the trades.
Yeah, I can understand why. This is not even me being like, I can't believe this 84-year-old guy is being stubborn. No, I think I get it. He's already pot committed, man.
Right.
$120 million, he's in.
Right.
He feels like he's done enough, and he feels
well,
like
he has because he made The Godfather.
Right.
You know? That's what's getting lost in all this, is that this is the guy who did The Godfather movies.
So, true.
I don't know. I what do you think? Do you have a studio in mind? Any guess?
Man, oh, man. If Ferrari had done better for Neon, and I'm really not sure what Civil War is.
But what's Neon going to pony up?
Neon wants to get into the bigger box office game. It wants to get into the bigger money game. But I don't believe Neon is going to pony up something huge, moving up from the boutique to the bigger studio level now, because they're probably a little gun-shy, I would say, after Ferrari. So, yeah, I would doubt Neon goes in for it. So that leaves the big studios at the end of the day. Paramount's in flux. Who the hell?
Paramount's.
What are they going to do?
They're being sold. I mean,
if
Paramount's like merger goes in quickly, then that's what I was thinking. Like maybe Skydance comes in and does it as like a big splashy move. But you also, if you are just acquiring one of the major studios or merging with the major studios, they're going out of their way to say it's not an acquisition, even though it's an acquisition. I don't know that you want your first big splashy move to be a movie that seems to have the majority opinion that it is not fit for any one audience.
Huh. Yeah, that's a bad it's a bad omen. We'll get into more omens at the end of the episode, but that is a bad omen. My guess, like gun to my head, like a Sony Pictures Classics or a Focus Features. Somehow they
Focus
a deal
makes sense
there.
I mean, they got the Universal behind
Searchlight.
Them. Yeah, Searchlight makes sense.
One of those three makes to me, and he'll have to take a bath on the financials, but that makes more sense for the film's success at the end of the day. But again, if you're judging the film's success off of the price tag, that's not going
to
be good.
I don't know if I brought this guy's name up, but what if he just gives it to Tarantino to play in Tarantino's theaters in L.A., and it's like an exclusive thing for those theaters. I don't know. Would that help?
You are hooked on Tarantino.
I really am lately. I'm just...
I don't know. What is... That's
I don't
like
know what
not...
It is. I don't know
we
what
haven't...
It is.
It's not like we've been the Tarantino podcast.
I know.
We did one rewatch series for them.
I
mean, they really don't reference...
You know what it is? I've been thinking a lot about 2019 lately, and I'm so bitter.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is still a good rewatch. I've been craving another one. That's like a yearly rewatch that needs to happen.
It's great.
And I've been on a F it, just watch good movies run of late, where I'm like Social Network. I think I've mentioned this. It's been going great. Three Amigos. Oh, I'm happy.
Three Amigos.
When my basketball teams are winning and when I'm watching good movies, I am a much happier man.
Life is good.
My cup is running over. All right. We got to get into these 14 movies here. Otherwise, we're just rambling.
We already
nonsense.
Took way too much time.
Oh, I don't even want to look at the timestamp, but go ahead.
All right. We'll start with Anora. Well, these are the 14 films that are playing Cannes that were announced. Anora from Neon and director Sean Baker. He, of course, did The Florida Project. He also did Red Rocket, which was like flirting with some Academy recognition. Competed in competition in Cannes in 2021. Anora stars Mikey Madison of Scream and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There it is. Anora is a comedy about a sex worker shot in New York City and Las Vegas. Film was shot by director of photography Drew Daniels in 35mm print, and the aim was for the imagery to have a cleaner 70s cinema aesthetic, that from World of Real.
So we're getting a lot of 70s cinema aestheticism going on right now in the film world, which is, I guess, cool. I think we both love to see a Mikey Madison breakout here, though. And he's had an acting performance in his last two films break out with Simon Rex and before that Willem Dafoe and the young
Sean
girl
Baker's
from the
had
Florida.
A
Sean Baker.
Yeah. Mikey, all right.
He's been directing good performances.
Yeah.
So
and Mikey Madison, I mean, she can play strung out, that's for sure. I don't know what this character is going to be, if it's about a sex worker in New York City and Las Vegas from the 70s, but it seems to fit the... She was great in Scream 5.
Yeah, we are fans, no question.
The Apprentice, something we'll be talking about probably a lot this year, for better or worse, from Ali Abbasi, who did Border and Holy Spider. Sebastian Stan is Donald Trump. Jeremy Strong is Roy Cohn. I didn't know that. That makes a lot of sense that Jeremy Strong is in heavily consideration for supporting actor already, knowing that he's playing Roy Cohn. That's going to be meaty. Maria Bakalova is Ivana Trump. Martin Donovan is Fred Trump, Donald's father, Martin Donovan from Weeds and Tenet there. Set during the early years of Trump's business career, the film is reported to mainly focus on the relationship of Trump and Roy Cohn, a New York City prosecutor notable for working with Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Second Red Scare. It is described as a mentor-protege narrative that documents the start of an American dynasty and tackles themes including power, corruption, and deception.
Terrifying. So, all right. Ali Abbasi's previous two films were about a brutal Iranian strangler serial murderer and cave trolls having a lot of sex in the woods. Suffice it to say, Michael, I have zero effing clue as to what tone
you're not looking at it The properly. Apprentice. Because those are you tell me those are his two preceding films, and I'm like, yeah, of course, the next step in the natural progression of things is to make a movie about Trump.
I really don't know what this is, but like we've seen the Too Soon biopic done before, right? I mean, the most famous one is Oliver Stone doing W with Josh Brolin as George W. Bush. I mean, we've seen Fincher do The Social Network, obviously, about the founder of Facebook there, you know, too soon, even though that one really worked. I don't know what to expect from The Apprentice. This could be the best picture of the year. This could be just
no, it cannot.
W
no, it
part
cannot.
Two.
No, it cannot. It cannot be the best picture of the year. I agree with you. I don't know what to expect, but I mean, come on. You think that this movie's going to be best picture in this election year?
We have a void in terms of the obvious best picture contenders. I mean, his movies are well made. Ali Abbasi, I mean, Border was nominated for an Oscar, and Makeup and Hair was in a shortlist for international film.
I know you saw Civil War by Alex Garland. Is this how it starts?
That would be something else, wouldn't it? I can't wait to talk about Civil War. But
they're
doing
a lot on the... they're doing a lot of pushing Sebastian Stan as Trump. I don't know if that's for, you know, Sebastian Stan's sake or if it's just that surreal that we are, like you said, having a biopic being done this soon and close to the real thing, like being that prevalent within modern society. Like, it's not like we're done with Trump by any means. For the love of God, the guy's going to be, has a real chance to be president again in November, come November. So. Yeah. I don't know what to make it. Like, you're right. This could be anything. I would be stunned if this is taken seriously. I mean, Clayton Davis, I think, was on it. And Scott, I think, said it too. Like, aren't people just going to be sick of the guy? Especially if he wins?
Especially if he wins. But if he loses, is it safer?
Dance
is
on
it
his grave,
safer?
Maybe? I don't know.
We liberals won't be over, you know, over that necessarily, above that, let's say.
No,
we're not good
no.
enough people to
absolutely
we would
not.
Happily
absolutely
right.
not good enough
we
people.
Would happily June Squibb all over that plot.
Right
mm-hmm.
Good job,
Bird. I will take on Bird here from Andrew Arnold. American Honey Fish Tank director Barry Keoghan is Bug. Franz Rogowski is Bird. We don't know a lot about this movie. We know this. We know Bailey lives with his brother, Hunter, and his father, Bug, who raised them alone in a squat in northern Kent. Bug doesn't have much time to devote to them. Bailey looks for attention and adventure elsewhere.
So we've seen a still of a shirtless, tattooed, motorcycle-driving Barry Keoghan. I am not yet ready to give up hope that he's not playing Larry Bird.
I don't know if the hick from French Lick had a phase where he was like, you know, ruffian from the squats in northern Kent. No?
How funny would it be if he took his jersey off and he was just covered in tattoos on his torso his whole life?
It would be very funny. It would be very funny. I have not grappled with the fact that Bird is just this major Oscar contender yet. even though it's showing up on everybody's lists, Andrea Arnold has made a movie that really got under my skin with Fish Tank, Fassbender's kind of breakout there. And yet he was like this. You don't know if he's the sleaziest character. Is the relationship untoward? I can't remember that movie. I saw it 10 years ago. But what is this movie going to be about? I don't know. Like, it's just, okay, here's the family dynamic. They live in Northern Kent.
Mm. And they all like names with bees.
And yet everybody is predicting this movie. Why? What do they know, Michael? What do they know more than us about Bird?
You remember Blue Bayou and how when like Ken came around, everyone had Blue Bayou at the top of their list, and that was definitely going to be
the wonder,
yeah,
or
yeah,
Wonderstruck,
yeah,
or how many, yeah,
different Wonder movies. Burt Wonderstone,
Burt Wonderstone, yes, just like those others.
Uh-huh.
Is Bird going to be the this had Oscar buzz
right
pick number one pick of this year, or is it going to be great? I have no idea.
Well, we'll see. We don't know yet, but we do know something at least about Kinds of Kindness.
Yorgos Lanthimos, like we thought, is going to take his next film to Cannes. I mean, that June 21st release date was, I mean, we were all over that. They recut a teaser, 26 seconds long. Like, inject this in my veins. Like, Cobra's Brand New Bitch song is playing over it. You get more dancing from Emma Stone. You get all of the things we saw in the other trailer, but essentially just replaced into this teaser, and it was just awesome. Like, Kinds of Kindness just put out the most awesome teaser ever. Like, top five.
Is this the anthology movie? Or am I getting confused?
Yeah, this
is the anthology.
This is the anthology Yorgos movie. I hope it's connected somehow, and we feel walking away from it. It's like, oh, this is like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
you know,
that'd be,
I mean,
great.
That would be my favorite thing.
That would be great.
Who knows?
Yeah, no idea what to expect from Yorgo. Fisheye Lens. I can expect a Fisheye Lens.
That's right. Yeah. We'll expect a Fisheye. Oh, Canada, Michael. Paul Schrader of First Reform, The Card Counter, and Master Gardener, his last three. Writer of Taxi Driver, of course. Oh, Canada stars Jacob Elordi, Uma Thurman, Richard Gere, and Michael Imperioli. Leonard Fife, one of 60,000 draft evaders and deserters who fled to Canada to avoid serving in Vietnam, shares all his secrets to demythologize his mythologized life.
Interesting plot there. Schrader additionally described the film to IndieWire as about Canada being a metaphor for death. He said, "It's my Ivan Ilyich. I was sort of saturated with dying at that time," which I have to assume is every time, knowing Paul Schrader and having seen First Reformed. I had been in the hospital multiple times during COVID. Oh, that's satire.
Yeah, but he did come out of it, and he made this movie. So, yeah, another Paul Schrader movie then, right? Yeah, just another little film on the resume. Paul Schrader. Can you be excited to see a Paul Schrader film? Is that allowed?
Morbidly curious, maybe.
I think I allowed myself to be excited to see Master Gardener, and then I walked away. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Why would you go to a festival and see this movie and think that it was going to be?
It's like holding fun. The Arrested Development bit where Michael holds the bag that says Dead Dove on it and then looks inside. He's like, well, I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
Good job. I actually wrote down the pronunciation here. Where is it? Parthenope. Parthenope.
It's Parthenope.
Directed. Parthenope is directed by Paolo Sorrentino of The Great Beauty and Hand of God. Parthenope stars Gary Oldman, and the IMDb premise reads, Parthenope is a woman who bears the name of her city. Is she a siren or a myth?
Naturally being played by Gary Oldman, the siren. Variety writes, according to Sorrentino, the film is about a woman named Parthenope who bears the name of her city but is neither siren nor myth. In Greek mythology, Parthenope, as she is known in English, is the name of a siren who, having failed to entice Odysseus with her songs, cast herself into the sea and drowned. Her body washed up, talk about falling on your sword. Her body washed up on a symbolic foundational rock where Naples now lies. Neapolitans in Italy are known as Parthenopeans. That's also from Variety.
Yeah, so.
So who the hell's the siren?
There's no siren. The IMDb is at war with Wikipedia and Variety. That's what we're going to learn in this episode. Because Parthenope is neither. Is she a siren or myth? And then Sorrentino gets interviewed and he's like, no, she's not a siren nor a myth. So something's going on here. I don't know what. But they are not.
So is this
going to
be the
page thing
where Gary Oldman's wearing a wig and he's going to be like maybe hearing stuff and being drawn to a certain place?
Every single one of this guy's movies is about an old man being drawn to a certain place. Okay? So, yeah.
Good. Good. Let's go to something more linear and talk about a Cronenberg film.
The Shrouds, David Cronenberg. Well, look, listen to this premise. Karsh, an innovative businessman.
What is going on with the names?
Karsh. Innovative businessman, Michael, and grieving widower, builds a device to connect with the dead inside a burial shroud. Vincent Cassell is Karsh. He is, of course, the coach. I want to say coach. It's not coach. It's the director in Black Swan, you know, with Nina there.
Is it not Vincent Cassell? Also,
Vincent Cassell is another
one. I've always called him Vincent Cassell. I thought that was Vincent.
Why have I always called him Vincent Cassell?
You may be right. I may be crazy.
Sam Cassell?
You may be a lunatic you're looking for. Yeah.
Okay. Eastern Promises. He was also the degenerate son of the gangster there. Mm-hmm. Diane Kruger. Nice to see her back in The Fade. She was very good in that. Obviously, Inglourious Basterds, The Bridge, etc. Guy Pearce. He's always good. Yep. Memento there. I'm looking at stills of The Shrouds, Michael, and I'm intrigued because it's like this futuristic sci-fi whatever weirdness that probably results in body horror.
I was just going to say, inevitably it will end with body horror. This was supposed to be a Netflix series. Netflix abandoned plans, according to IndieWire, and Cronenberg took it upon himself and said the film is very personal and autobiographical. I don't know what that could mean.
And yet, I hope metaphorical, because there's going to be sci-fi body horror weirdness.
Definitely.
We know that's coming.
No question. Some more intriguing selections coming to Cannes. The Substance, directed by Coralie Farjit of Revenge. The Substance is allegedly an American body horror film. Hey, starring Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Margaret Qualley's been busy.
And on Screen Talk this morning, they were just hearing buckets of blood. Buckets.
Well.
In The Substance.
Revenge, yeah. That checks out.
Revenge was pretty rad.
Revenge was great.
I want to rewatch it. It's on Shudder, isn't it?
Yeah. Still? At least it has been. I don't know if it still is, but yeah, it has been. I thought it was a Shudder movie. I think Shudder.
Shudder forerunning movies, yes. Like one of those originals.
Yep. Yeah,
I want to rewatch it. Great. I'm churning with Shudder. I'm off Shudder right now. I'm gonna have to get it back because Late Night with the Devil comes out next week.
This is why I don't bother canceling. Just I'm gonna end up broke in a ditch, but I don't have it in me to keep calling these people and emailing. And I want to join. I want to cancel. I went to a car wash like 3 months ago, and they had like a subscription service and a guy meet you there. I had no interest in signing up for it, but of course I did because who cares? Whatever. Yes, what? Of course. Just sign me up. I've been paying $30 a month for car washes. I don't get my car washed that often.
You got like what Adam Sandler used to call a piece of shit car. No offense.
No, none taken.
I also have a piece of shit car because I want to drive my piece of shit car into the ground so I, you know, for as long as possible so I don't have to pay car payments. Yeah. I mean, it's a good deal. Like,
all they got to do is show back up and cancel the subscription, but I never will.
Wow. That is like baffling. You're nuts. Anyway,
the idea of communicating with people is such a burden to me.
Mike, I got to figure out things to sell you. All right, you're an easy mark over here.
Yeah.
We'll move on to Rumors, directed by Guy Madden of My Winnipeg and Seances. I'm not familiar with Guy Madden's work.
Me either.
There's two other directors on this. I'm sorry, I didn't write them down. But Rumors stars Cate Blanchett, Alicia Vikander, Charles Dance, Nikki Amuka-Bird, who's getting Oscar buzz this year, by the way, for another film, which I forget, and Zlatko Buric of The Pusher and Triangle of Sadness, where he got a lot of Oscar buzz for Triangle of Sadness. But Rumors has a plot premise that reads as follows. The leaders of seven wealthy democracies get lost in the woods while drafting a statement on a global crisis, facing danger as they attempt to find their way out. Doesn't this seem like it's from Succession or something?
I hope this is a comedy, or at least a dark comedy in some way. I mean, that sounds like a great premise for a comedy.
I don't know. I have no idea.
This guy's a cast, too.
A filmmaker for 30 years. Making what, and he's done like triple the short films as he has features. I'm not familiar with his work, and it's out of competition, which is like scares the ever living shit out of me, by the way. And they spelled Rumors wrong. They spelled it wrong. There's a U.
Well, they spelled it the David Long way. Do you think Rumors would be better if it were a biopic about Fleetwood Mac?
No, because didn't we just see that on Stars starring Riley Keough? Nobody liked it.
Oh,
we didn't
like it. Yeah, you might be right. Yeah,
it was a series. I watched one episode. I was like, this is, she's beautiful, but this is crap.
Mm. All right. Well, I tried. Sorry, Fleetwood Mac.
Emilia
Perez, directed by Jacques Audiard.
You're a jerk.
Rust and bone. Mike went through the trouble of writing the phonetic spelling of all these French names, and I'm just an ass. It's one of those episodes. This is not one for the Pantheon. You do not have to worry about this episode ending up on the Mike and Oscar Mount Rushmore.
Listen to it once and never
just
again.
Be satisfied. Kill an hour of your weekend. According to Variety, Emilia Perez is a musical crime comedy starring Zoe Saldana, Selena Gomez, and Edgar Ramirez with the following premise. A woman is tasked with assisting an escaped Mexican cartel leader undergoing sex reassignment surgery to both evade the authorities and affirm her gender. Look, if you're going to do musicals that are off the beaten path and like risque musicals about not everyday content, you might as well get Lady Gaga. You might as well get Selena Gomez. You might as well get the best of the best.
Distributed by Path here with a sizable budget, 21 million euros, which is a lot more dollars, right? Have one of the major fashion houses, and I don't know how often this happens, but Saint Laurent Productions is like a co-producer on this one.
Interesting.
So who knows what they're in for, but like, yeah, this is a fascinating project. Emilia Perez. I'm in for this one. Yeah. Just out of sheer curiosity. That has premise power.
Last two movies have piqued my interest.
Okay.
Limonov, The Ballad, directed by Kirill. You didn't give me a pronunciation for this. Sarah Brenikoff.
Just phonetically. Yeah, you got it.
His fifth selection at Cannes. Limonov stars Ben Whishaw, my mortal enemy of women talking passages. He sucks.
Mary Poppins.
Here's the premise.
No, you didn't like him in one movie.
That's right.
You didn't like Ben Whishaw.
Is that a defense of him?
You have a grudge based on a character he played in one movie.
Yeah. The outrageous story of Edward Limonov, the radical Soviet poet who became a bum in New York, a sensation in France, and a political anti-hero in Russia. This was, I would imagine, before the internet.
Okay. Good point. But yeah, it's like, how did he become those three separate things in those three separate countries? I have no idea. I was intrigued by that premise. I haven't seen any of Kirill's films, so I don't know his work very well. Tchaikovsky's something and Petrov's Flu were his last two. So okay. I'm surprised this is not called Limonov's Ballad.
Mm.
just to continue good point. Keep the grammar
good point.
Going here.
Good point.
But quite the character for a story, let's just say that. I'm intrigued in that regard.
I wish the worst for Ben Whishaw. The Balcon, no, I don't. It's all a bit. It's all a bit. I actually have nothing against Ben Whishaw. He's a fine actor. The Balconettes, co-written, directed by, and starring Noemi Merlin, who was in Portrait of a Lady on Fire, the director of which, Celine Sciamma, is the other co-writer on this, so this might have some Oscar legs here. During a heat wave in Marseille, three roommates are cooped up in their apartment. From the balcony, they look out at their mysterious neighbor, about whom they indulge in all sorts of fantasies. However, late into the night, an ordinary conflict turns into a bloodbath. Got some Rear Window vibes in this. Got some that scene in Girls where Lena Dunham looks out and realizes that one of the other girls is actually in love with Adam Driver vibes in this.
Creating fantasies in her own head. In the midnight section, and yeah, I'm reading this, and they're like, "Oh, they have a cute crush on this guy next door," and this ordinary conflict turns into a bloodbath. What the hell? I here's what I like. I like that Noemi Merlin. I don't know.
Merlin.
I'm guessing. Merlin.
Noemi Merlin.
I think we are fired. We are rejected.
If there's one people that definitely hate us at this point, it's got to be French people.
It's the French.
Yeah. Rightfully so.
We know this.
Rightfully so.
But they might hate listen to us, which we'll take it.
Yeah, sure. Take anything.
Midnight screenings at Cannes have not necessarily been my cup of tea. Like, if you list the films that I've seen out of that selection, I don't like many of them. Train to Busan in 2016 is one that I liked, so I'm rooting for Noemi Merlin here. I think it's cool that her directorial debut is some genre fair, so that's what I'm in for with her.
I would like to see how that gets pulled off too, the fantasy turned horror aspect of it.
Yeah. So listen to this next one, The Girl with the Needle, from director Magnus von Horn of Sweat, a Danish film that I really liked on Mubi, by the way. It was one of those originals on Mubi. Like kind of like Revenge for Shudder. Mm-hmm. But in Copenhagen, young pregnant Caroline takes on a position as a wet nurse for an older woman named Dagmar to help support herself. Dagmar operates a clandestine adoption agency under the guise of a candy shop, assisting disadvantaged mothers place their unwanted newborns in foster homes. Caroline grows close to Dagmar, but she is soon faced with the nightmarish reality she unwittingly entered.
Got a couple things here where it's like every nice premise, good premise, sweet premise, and then horrible, horrible ending, which is pretty akin to how life is. So I'm not against what these two movies are putting forth here.
The French taste might be something I'm gravitating toward. Meanwhile, the IMDb premise reads, a fairy tale about a horrible truth. So again,
interesting.
IMDb and Wikipedia, yeah, at least for me, are the filmmakers and IMDb, they're just at odds for some reason.
Interesting.
I don't get what they're doing.
The opening night film of Cannes is going to be the second act. It's from director, that's a word, Quentin Dupere. Second act stars Lea Seydoux of Crimes of the Future, of course, Vincent Lindon of Titan, and Louis Garrel of Little Women. The premise: Florence wants to introduce David, the man she is madly in love with, to her father, but David is not attracted to Florence and wants to get rid of her by throwing her into the arms of his friend Willie, a little foisting, as Larry David would call it. The four characters meet in a restaurant in the middle of nowhere.
What? Sometimes French films can be vexing. I just want to say that. Now, listen, I don't know if you're trying to mispronounce every French word or if you just that's naturally what you do. I don't know. I don't even know if you are.
No, I was sincere.
I'm an ignorant rube myself. Yeah. But who's not attracted to Lea Seydoux? Just stop it. Yeah. So I'm already just like suspicious of the second act. However, I've either loved or hated Dupere's films. I really loved Deerskin. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan. It was so weird. It was during the pandemic that it came, you know, on VOD, and I like that. But I hated Smoking Causes Coughing. That was not for me. Rubber. Did you see Rubber? Was Rubber a slasher about a tire. I remember seeing this, and I searched, I control F'd my movie list for the last 15 yeah. years, and I saw it on there, but yeah. I can't remember a thing about Rubber.
I never saw it, but I can't tell you the number of times I almost like rented it off PVOD, I think, or Redbox back in the day. I want to say it was like an option or something like that. But there was a lot of I was circling it. But yes, I think you have the premise exactly correct. It is a slasher about a killer tire.
Wow. Anyway, we discussed 14 Cannes selections today. This is only a few of the many films that are going to Cannes. I'm sure we'll review or review the reviewers on many more during our coverage. This festival remains very white and very male. There's going to be more announcements to come on the Cannes lineup, though this does seem like it's most of the vast majority of the films that are coming. Still, it's pretty bad that they can't do better than 31% films with female directors. I think that's where they're at, according to IndieWire Screen Talk, that episode I listened to this morning. So it's, again, still not very good. But I guess they didn't get worse, which is not a win.
That's
Can you hear my dog snoring that loud? Somebody's got to hear that.
I couldn't hear it, but I'd rather listen to that than these sad statistics about Cannes. Right, is it Cannes or Venice that I always go off the handle? I feel like it's Venice.
It's been both. They both don't have the best track record. The difference is being, you know, women seem to rise above the fray and rise above the issues. And, I mean, two out of the last 3 years, they've won the Palme. And Greta Gerwig's leading the jury this year. And, yeah, so F it all. The ladies are taking charge no matter what you do. So that's pretty cool. All right.
Yeah.
That's our Cannes segment for today. We did it.
We got through that. Let's see what else we can get through. We'll talk about the Gothams. They're going to split off their TV awards into their own show. Marcus Jones of IndieWire reports the just-announced Gotham TV Awards will for the first time take place Tuesday, June 4th in New York City.
So this is fun to read about because this is expansion from the Gothams that I think we were expecting in one way, but I was expecting more categories, more exposure. You know, maybe they'll get a TV deal at some point. We've seen their little award show that kicks off our awards season every November grow and grow and grow. And now they're splitting off what was just like three or four categories of TV awards on their film award show. And they're splitting off into their own TV awards for June, kind of getting on the TV awards show calendar. I just think this is good omens for the business, for the awards season business, Michael. I'm excited and happy for the Gotham. And yeah, I think this means bigger and better things for the film awards show, I would imagine, as well. I think they're going to build that out, and they got to expand categories for both shows.
I have no qualms about them spinning off into their own separate award shows, and I'm with you there. I'm happy about it. But why not do it closer to the Emmys?
Well, the Emmys are...
September.
The Emmys are coming back sooner than the Oscars, so...
But the Emmys are in September, no? No.
But they've made a brand at doing the first, being the first.
That's fine. Right? So put it in July. I don't know. 3 months prior to the Emmys seems like a little... Although, I guess...
I don't Gotham's know the TV award.
No, yeah, November and, you know, Gotham's awards are always in November, and then the Oscars are in March. So I guess that kind of lines up. I don't know. It just seems a little too early for me, but what do I know?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. I'm just... Yeah, well, you know, some people view glasses as full of water.
And some people smash the glass and use it as a weapon for anyone nearby.
All right, speaking of smashed glasses that you want to throw at people.
What a disgrace this is. Go ahead.
Speak No Evil, which is probably too soon of a remake after the 2022 film. Look, Blumhouse and Universal Pictures are behind this. To you know,
respected people who know how to handle horror. Yeah.
However, directed by James Watkins, The Woman in Black is on his CV. Remember seeing The Woman in Black together?
When we couldn't see the giant Super Bowl parade. So we went to The Woman in Black and I fell asleep. I remember vividly.
What a misfire. What? Anyway. Starring James McAvoy of Split and Atonement, etc., Mackenzie Davis of Tully and, you know, the Halt and Catch Fire, Terminator, Dark Fate, Aisling French Ciosi of the Nightingale. I just saw her in The Last Voyage of the Demeter. And then Scoot McNairy's been in a million things. Again, Halt and Catch Fire. And I mean, he's literally in everything, Scoot McNairy. He's always good. So how can they screw this up? And then we watch this trailer where they gave away some things.
It's probably the most innovative and certainly one of the creepiest horror movies I've seen since like Cabin in the Woods, like 10 years ago, 12 years ago or so. And what makes it innovative and creepy is like the depravity of what realistically written human characters can do and the lengths they would go to. And just that, I guess, just their how depraved people can be that you think you know. But the lengths of their depravity are not something you would see coming in the original movie. And in this trailer, they give all that away.
It's as vexing as it gets. And I wonder about how you could market this movie in the perfect way to sell the tickets you need to sell.
Just make McAvoy creepy. Make them the creepy couple. Like, the first half of this trailer is fine. There's something off about them. Like, they get close with the other couple, and then McAvoy starts doing some off-kilter. Like, the doctor, I'm not a doctor, just kidding, I am a doctor, like, misdirect that they have in this. That's fine. Make that the trailer.
I get frustrated with these remakes. I really do. Because then,
American remakes are the worst out of two, yeah.
Then it's so rare. Like, Matt Reeves did a good one, Let Me In, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Yep.
That was a good one. I mean, there's a handful of them out there. It's just, I don't know. These are frustrating because it feels like everybody's familiar with the story. You don't know if you're marketing.
I mean, they give it away twice in the trailer, Mike. One when the kid opens his mouth, and then if you didn't get it that time, they have the thing at the end of the trailer where the kid does the thing.
I know. Terrible.
Oh, my God. Right. What is the point of it?
And McAvoy's giving a good performance.
Yes.
Like, I'm enjoying McAvoy. I'm enjoying the cast here. I thought Mackenzie Davis is doing very well.
I agree.
She's been underserved as well.
Mm-hmm.
I want more.
I don't know who you're getting into the theater by including those things into the trailer.
Yeah, just go on Shudder and watch the original now.
Yeah, for real.
Don't even watch it before you watch this trailer, by the way.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. Do not watch this trailer if you plan on watching the original.
I'm very proud of you, by the way. You did not even spoil it. And you had rage in your heart, and you didn't spoil it. That's very poised.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, it is time for me to review a couple of movies, and I hope that you're happy to hear these things, because I was not expecting to like these two movies. I like them a great deal. The first Omen, Michael. The first Omen. I'm not a huge Omen fan. I like the original. Actually, the Omen remake, or was it a remake or a requel? I can't remember. That was okay.
The 2006 one?
Yeah.
And it was a remake, I believe.
It's a remake? Yeah. So that was okay. The dogs were scary in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I had so much fun with the first Omen from the very first scene. I did not expect to have fun. But when they're dangling a stained glass window over the conversation of perhaps the two most serious-looking priests in the history of God, and Charles Dance and Ralph Ineson, I am laughing out loud at the playfulness of that setup. And then the scene somehow turns where I'm eking my way to the end of it. Like, this movie puts you on the right kind of roller coaster, and the director here, Arkasha Stevenson, she might be the next great horror director if she wants to be. Like, she really shows a lot of capability here. Like, whenever she wanted a jump scare or a creep out of me, she got one. It's all practical effects, apparently.
Great.
That's what I've heard. So it's just like all in-camera stuff. It's nothing CGI. It's performance-related. You have the actors selling it. And Nell Tiger-Free, oh my goodness, what a great performance. What a fun performance. It looks like she's having so much fun in this. And that's what I didn't expect from this movie. I didn't expect to have fun, but there's like a great party scene. There's a ton of like Like, I want to go to Rome in 1971, tourism goods delivered okay, here. Like, good. I'm really upset that I can't go to Rome in 1971. I'm really upset about that. It's not like, I'm watching this movie. Like, I want to go. I just want to go to a disco in 1971, please. I need to hang. I'm getting the call home as an Italian man. So, this is a very strong setup, and then you have a really strong connection between some of these characters that usually, like the creepy kid and the nun who's also a teacher, like, yeah, you can tell that, okay, apparently they have a connection, right? But you're not feeling it yourself. But I'm won over by the connection between this educator and the troubled kid in the story as an audience member, which is extremely important. And then, obviously, the horror scenarios, when they start rolling in, they're disgusting and spectacular and spectacular, disgusting. I was like, I was in for this. Great job by the director, Arkasha Stevenson. On the negative side, I mean, there's a few things. Like, the plot is a bit predictable in a few places. It doesn't help that it's so very similar to Immaculate. But, yeah, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting in for here with The First Omen, in a way, just kind of built in. There's also like a 10-minute stretch there where it's a bit of a lull and they get a little lost in Act 2. But still, I mean, this is a high B+.
Wow.
Big fan. My favorite horror film of the year, which is saying a lot. I really love Late Night with the Devil. And I think like the best review I can give for The First Omen is that I didn't want to see this movie. As you guys heard in the last episode, I was embarrassed to go see it because I felt a guilt trip myself into go seeing it after we recorded. Literally, after we recorded on Wednesday. A guilt trip myself to go see it. And now I want to see it again. I want to take my brother to see it.
No kidding.
I want to see it again.
Is it a remake or is it supposed to be a prequel to The Omen?
Prequel to The Omen.
Okay. Interesting.
It's a prequel to The Omen.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I don't know if I've overhyped it now because it was such a fun discovery, but I really liked it. So B+88 for The First Omen. And then, Michael, I was in a foul mood yesterday when I was going in to watch Civil War. And to demonstrate, I don't know if this has ever happened to people before, but the concessions line at the AMC was so long, and I ultimately bailed on it. So here I was going to get myself a little bag of popcorn, a little soda, a little snacky wacky, and enjoy, because I think I'm going into a bummer of a movie, right? So sometimes when I know I'm going in for a punishing film, I'll get myself a little candy or something.
Get a little treat to balance you out.
So that's number one problem. I get in there and my seat is like heated and it's gradually heating my ass. What is this? What is this sorcery? I realize there's buttons on the seat. This brand new theater, Dolby Theater, cinema. It's gorgeous. But you can heat or cool your seats. And I ended up fixing it, but like my heat, I'm like, why do I got swamp ass out of nowhere? This is bullshit. So I'm hot, I'm snackless, and the movie starts.
you can control the heater.
Look, I even should have moved seats. Like there's 30 separate solo white guys in the movie theater for Civil War. So I feel like one of the lonely weirdos watching this fake story about what it seems like to be, could be our future and a very real possibility, the grimmest of possibilities. And I feel like we're all the same a-hole in this movie theater right now. And my butt is hot and I don't have my soda. So it's a terrible way to start this movie.
Right.
And then the movie starts and I'm wrapped. I'm wrapped after this cliched opening of, okay, you got these photojournalists. There's obviously civil unrest going on. We don't know where in the war we are or whatever. But like this scene plays out and the complications of the sequence are more geared towards the war photographers and the specificity and the absurdity of their role as documentarians of these atrocities. Like you can't believe, like they're 3 feet away.
It seems like this is combatants. Everybody has gone out of their way to see how apolitical this film is.
It is somewhat somewhat, but I don't think it's that apolitical
really?
At the end of the day, because I feel like it's, he says some of that, Alex Garland. I just listened to the Big Pictures interview of him before hopping on with you today.
And I've seen Kirsten Dunst say it. I've seen people on Twitter say it. I mean, it's been a running theme that people are saying, no, don't go into this thinking that it's like trying to take a stance politically.
And yet you kind of feel some of the politics going on here. But okay. Civil War does some things you don't expect, though. Like, number one, it's a short, brisk story. Like, it's 1 hour and 40 minutes. It's a few days in the lives of these photojournalists. Maybe a week, but you're kind of focused on a few days. So I didn't expect that. I thought we were in for something different. Right. Then there's, like you said, there's really not politics in here necessarily. But here's what I didn't expect. Obviously, there's a lot of echoes and there's a lot of illusions. He can't help it. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, he can't help it. But there are zero fake politics in here. Like, you would figure, like, oh, this side of the war is, this is why it happened. You figure you'd get expo dumps everywhere. Exposition
right.
out of your ears to the point where you just want to rage against the machine. And I didn't get that.
Well, that's good. So that's a good thing. It's not as on the nose as what the Paul Thomas Anderson movie has been rumored to be about, is what you're saying.
Okay. what was that plot premise again? You texted me like in the middle of the night. I don't.
It was on a rumor site, I think, and I saw it on a TikTok. But it supposedly is about how the MAGA movement has become entrenched as one of the leading political party in America, and the PTA movie is about 20 years or so in the future, where a new generation of basically progressive hippies come up to fight the MAGA movement, and I think the hippies are led by Leo.
God. Oh my God! Yeah. In flannel,
apparently
the future hippie is flanneled.
The future is flannel, my friend. It's all hearsay at this point, so don't take any of it as gospel. But that was the rumor.
This was not Don't Look Up. This was not PTA's next movie. This was like you don't get a lot of those fake politics at all.
Okay,
but it's refreshing as an audience member where you're trying to figure out what the hell's happening in terms of the play-by-play of this war. So that's good. Don't like look it up, because that was like enjoyable to like kind of figure out where they were at. But you don't expect modern warfare in cities to be like this necessarily. At least I didn't. I mean, maybe I have to. I've watched a bunch of the Ukraine documentaries. I've watched the Syrian war documentaries, and yet I still didn't expect war to be like this. Like the action scenes that are in there, like I don't know, when you're on the front lines of this thing, like this is intense. Like I was rattled when I walked out of Civil War. I was rattled.
I think you should be. I, like, right? My Isn't nerves. That, that's kind shook. Of the point.
So, but that's like I kind of expected it to be a war movie a little bit, but I didn't expect to like love the music. Like I love the soundtrack of this thing. Like Apocalypse Now. I loved these characters. Like I didn't expect to like the character Kaylee Spaney's character and Kirsten Dunst's character. My goodness, I loved her. Could not love her a character more, even though she was like just this dogged journalist at the very end of her rope, so sick of this whole thing. And yeah, I couldn't love her character more. So I'm freaking out like emotionally when she's freaking out in the movie. So it's like that had an effect. And then the story, you think it's going towards a certain type of blueprint, structural blueprint before you're yanked out of it. I just thought he did a nice job. He did a nice job with this one, racking your nerves, but paying off why he's doing it. So it's an effective thriller. And then you also get the added benefit of like the reverberations of trying of a think piece, So I think there's going to be a downside for some people because I think people want the politics. And I think you and I probably want the politics at the end of the day. I think there's something to be gained from a Don't Look Up. There's something to be gained from, we do think there are villains. We do think there are villains out there. We're not going to talk about, this thing like we're from this neutral place. However, like Alex Garland can make a movie, man. He's got a tank that rolls up to a security tower. He's got a helicopter hovering over a sniper. Like, holy shnikes. I'm absorbed. I'm a sick, degenerate voyeur watching this movie, and I can't help but just be wrapped up in it. I'm scarily high on Civil War right now. A-90. I want to rewatch it to kind of confirm what I'm thinking. Like, but I would have nominated this for Best Picture last year. That's where I'm at. And I have a newfound respect for the South By people because maybe I underestimated them a little bit. So far, the South By movies, Late Night with the Devil, Immaculate, and here with Civil War, they've been hit with me.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. So you have a front runner right now for your Oscars couple categories, it sounds like.
Civil War is my number one movie of the year. I'm very high. I like Kaylee Spaney. If she's a supporting actress, I could see her involved. I thought she was terrific. I really liked Wagner Moura. What an odd character he was. And then, my goodness, it's great. You know, you remember the teacher slash playwright in Lady Bird?
The teacher.
Stephen McKinley Henderson, old guy, and he's a character actor. He's been in 100 things. Stephen McKinley Henderson, you will recognize him immediately. Big guy. He does a beautiful job in this. So that plus like a terrifying cameo of Jesse Plemons. And yeah, man, this movie worked. I did not expect it to work on me as much as it did. I'm in.
There you go.
For Alex Garland. And I'm sad that he's saying like he's done. I know he's writing 28 years later. He may go back to writing. I mean, he's been a novelist before he was a filmmaker. So maybe he goes back to a writing spell and he's just like really, you know, feeling it because he's been making such movies, movies about such heavy subject matter.
Yeah, it's got to take its toll. I just hope
it's burnout, you know.
And speaking of bringing things full circle, there, speaking of more women in horror, it sounds like Nia DaCosta is going to be the director for 28 Years Later.
Yeah, so. I can get behind that if I can speak.
Why not?
Candyman's a rewatch I may do. Because Candyman, the highs are very high on that.
It's a good movie. Yeah, agree. There you go. Two seals of approval, overwhelming seals of approval in Civil War and The First Omen coming from Also Mike. And as always, dear listener, what matters most to us are your thoughts, both on those films or on the preview of Good God, Speak No Evil's remake, or especially about the Cannes lineup we talked about today, or anything else we do here in the MMO Empire. As always, you can leave us your comments, thoughts, questions, and concerns on our social medias. We are Mike, and Oscar on Facebook and Instagram at MM and Oscar on Twitter or X, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available wherever you do hear podcasts. And if you're listening to us on either the Apple Podcasts or Spotify app, if you appreciate what we do here, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a 5-star review, those help us out immensely. Thank you to everyone who has done so thus far. Michael, tell the good people what's coming next. Let's have some words of wisdom to end on.
I'm afraid of telling people what's coming next because it probably won't come next, because when I say anything, I get jinxed, and when something else happens and we do another episode.
That is correct.
But anyway, we do want to continue our year in preview series. We do want to have some guests help us finish that out. We also want to, you know, keep watching good movies. Like, this is fun. Like, I don't know about you, Mike, but I think we should start our film study series pretty soon. And I think Sasquatch Sunset is the perfect film to begin that with. I mean, all the Oscars, please. All
Civil
the Oscars.
War you could have talked me into.
Like, yeah, I mean, we could circle back and do Civil War, do Dune. I wonder if there's a way where we can actually, like, do a film study in, like, 40 minutes and be efficient, unlike we ever are.
That'd be nice. No. It's nice to dream.
Because if we could do that, then we can, like, do an extra episode in a week.
Right.
But we just yep.
Correct. This one is already over, well over an hour.
How did we do that? This is a shorter
this
doc.
This is nothing. This is a nothing
you
episode.
Didn't write down any takes.
I wrote down zero words in this document.
Yeah. How do we do this?
I don't know.
Anyway.
You're magic.
It's wise to maybe prepare sometimes. No, I don't know what it's wise to do, because when you prepare, then we go even longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you don't prepare, I think this is a good show.
Just ride the wave.
I had
fun. Just ride the wave.
I think you were at your best when you didn't do shit all.
Thank you.
You were great today. Yeah, you do less.
I will try to do significantly less. Guys, when reality sucks, you could do even less with us. We are Mike, and Oscar, trying to make award season year-round without the stuffiness. We will see you all very soon.
See ya.